Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for that music, Nazim. Nazim is on following our show on Blog Talk Radio as a mentor man. He's the author of the book Reconnected. Welcome to our live broadcast for June 1st, Saturday, 2013. Yes, this is a wonderful, wonderful day. Why is it a wonderful day? Because I choose it. Do you? Choose to have a beautiful day today. That's all it takes. No matter what's going on around you, make a choice. I know that we live in a world where there's many, many problems. But through all of that, there are many, many happinesses. Many ways to find happiness. So I ask you to take a moment and just reflect on this past week. And think about the things this week that you've done that make you happy. And if you do that, I promise you, you will find something that you can smile about. Some of us have to try a little harder than others, but I'm sure you can work it out. Today's topic is a tough one, as usual, because our focus is on helping students to succeed in the workforce and succeed in college or job training. And so in doing that and helping them to succeed, we have to address many of the issues that come up for students and teachers. And remember that all of us are students and teachers at one time or another in our lives. You're a student if you are willing to learn, and you are a teacher if you are willing to share. And so we hope that you adopt that philosophy today as you listen to some of the things that we're going to be talking about throughout our time together this morning, as we look at how we can identify symptoms of mental illness in adult students. Now, why is this an important topic to discuss? It's bothering a lot of students, for one thing. They're writing in, they're talking about it in counseling sessions with me, and they're talking about the fact of why is it that schools, the people at the schools, the teachers, the staff, even in one case, the psychiatrist who warned police, and no one did anything. What is the issue with that? No one did anything to stop violent, random violence from someone who claimed to have some mental illness or was diagnosed as mentally ill. Well, one very, very good reason for that. Share this with me. One very, very good reason is that just because someone is diagnosed as mentally ill does not mean that they are subjective or potentially violent. That's the message if we assume that someone who is diagnosed as mentally ill, we have to really decide what mentally ill really means, and that requires some knowledge about mental illness, don't you think? The issue of mental illness spreads from the big umbrella of mental disability. See, under that big umbrella, we've got everything from autism to dyslexia. And on the other spectrum of mental disability, we have the diagnosis of depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder or PTSD. You're hearing a lot of that lately with our veterans, and we'll talk about that. Stay tuned, because we're going to have some interesting information to share with you about veterans this morning. And if you stay on the show, you'll be really surprised at some of the information that you can take and share with other veterans that you know in the community, if you're not a veteran yourself. Today we have some special guests that will be joining us, and it'll be so wonderful to hear their side of the story about how school officials and staff, counselors, can help us identify some of the mental illness warning signs in adult students, and basically why it's so difficult for us to, as teachers, as a faculty, at colleges, as counselors, psychologists, to identify that someone who has been diagnosed with mental illness could possibly become potentially violent. So what happened, and I just want to elaborate a little bit on the fact that we're closing Mental Health Awareness for the month of May. A great, great project that started some time ago to bring awareness to the state of mental health in not only the United States, but all over the world. So we give great kudos to those who are involved in the Mental Health Awareness Month. We give great kudos to those of you who are going out and fighting for legislation that will help those with mental illness to be recognized in society as valuable citizens that have great contributions to make and already have. That the diagnosis does not become the person. The person has value. And if we appreciate that, we can gain so much from just opening up our eyes and our hearts and saying, let me learn a little bit more about this issue of mental illness that they keep pushing so hard in the media. You hear it almost daily that someone has to have a background check. Someone has to have a background check to determine if they're mentally ill, and then they supposedly can't have a firearm. And of course they are labeled, categorized. A student asked me not too long ago, so does that mean me? Does that mean that I can't get a background check because I'm diagnosed with bipolar disorder? And I don't think so. I don't see why that should be an issue. But I believe at this point that because of the lack of knowledge that people have about mental health, that we have a society that has negative stereotypes surrounding these issues of whether or not a student or person diagnosed as someone someone having symptoms of mental illness is potentially violent. I know our veterans out there are dealing with a lot of these stereotypes. I'm a veteran myself, and my empathy goes out for the fact that many people don't even understand what PTSD is. And it's unfortunate that they're just learning about PTSD because many veterans are coming back with that diagnosis, coming back from Afghanistan, Iraq, other places. But it's been around for a long time. It just simply means post-traumatic stress disorder. And boy, I can tell you a lot of things about post-traumatic stress disorder in so many different areas of our lives. Because basically it just means that after some type of trauma, there's stress. And tell me someone that doesn't experience that. It's important that we look at how we can identify some of the symptoms of mental illness in adult students. And one of the things that I would like to share with you this morning before we leave the show is some of the things that came up on WebMD. WebMD is, you can find it right on your internet, had some great warning signs about how to identify people with mental illness that are potentially may need to see a counselor or psychologist. And so I offer you that opportunity to check that out, because we'll be reviewing some of that. We have a caller online, and I'm trying to make sure that I give total attention to 254 area code. Good morning. This is Dr. Applewhite. Good morning. Okay. We have a caller that has been waiting for some time. Please feel free to call back in, 254 area code. I'm not sure where that is. But I'd like to also invite our special guest in, Dr. Michael Robinson. And Dr. Robinson will be with us very, very shortly. Please hold on as I bring Dr. Robinson in. Thank you so much for your patience. So we're dealing with some technical difficulties at this moment. Here's Wes Ricks with Two Worlds as we wait. Struggle to go to school, and some of the challenges that they're facing, especially those with disabilities. So I know you're on the line now, and you've been on the line for a while now, and I really think that it's okay for us to open up and have you come on right now. How about that? And we can have our little discussion right now before Dr. Michael Robinson. Yeah. So what have you finding? Tell us a little bit about Operation Veterans Promise and what you're trying to do.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting me on your show.
No problem.
To be a guest.
Happy to have you.
And I do think it's fortunate that let's have someone such as yourself that is willing to take the time to establish a platform which addresses important veterans issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I, such as yourself, have saw the same need to create a different platform. And for our near-term goals with Operation Veterans Promise, our goal is to be able to employ about a dozen or so veterans within the renewable energy sector and IT design, while at the same time starting up a renewable energy program within the Latin American communities.
Oh.
That will have direct benefit on the local, currently with the aid organization we're working on, about 5,000 individuals within the community down there, which we hope to expand on by working with other international aid organizations to supply them power.
Wonderful, wonderful. That sounds great. And another
addition. Yes.
Go ahead, Greg. I'm just saying another addition to the great work that you're doing to bring awareness to veterans. And hopefully together we get this news out there that there's a lot to be said, even though I that the platform for Student to Teacher Radio is that we talk about helping people to succeed at school in the workforce. But as both of us are veterans, we're concerned about the factor that there are many people returning, many soldiers returning from active duty into veteran with disability status and trying to go to school and dealing with so many challenges.
And it is difficult.
Yes. Have you dealt with any information you have any stats on that, or have you been challenged with some questions from veterans on those issues at all?
Currently, the veterans we've spoken to, a lot of debt issues, even despite the GI Bill benefits to continue their education because of the rising cost of tuition. The GI Bill covers their education for so long before they have to go out of pocket, and that's been an issue, which is why we've become involved with the student debt experts on our website to help alleviate that. But the best part about our program, that I believe, is the fact that when we become operational, once we reach into the new phases of our operation, we will be able to. The whole goal of Operation Veterans Promise is to donate back to organizations such as yourself, such as yours, and be able to make a real impact by assisting veterans in this way, that with local communities that are already established to try to help veterans.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. That sounds great. One of the things that I'm very, very challenged about lately is the ongoing stereotype of veterans returning with PTSD issues and trying their best to integrate into society. And not just PTSD issues, there's a numerous anxiety, depression issues that they're dealing with. Just in what you were saying a moment ago, with dealing with trying to go to school and knowing that the GI Bill is only going to pay for so much of it, that's a stress factor in itself. But back to the most critical issue is helping veterans to attach to resources, services that will really, truly help them.
Yeah, and that is important.
Greg, when we talk about just talking, we can talk all day long, okay, about the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that when I get off the phone with someone, and I do online counseling, and I get off the phone with someone, I want to know that I have given them a resource that they can actually attach to. And then I want to make sure that I follow up with them and make sure that they have attached to that resource and that resource is working for them. Because so often we give a number or drop a website on someone and we leave it there. And this not only happens with veterans. I'm talking about students as a whole when they're calling for information. We have to be more cognizant as a society to know that it's not enough just to give someone a number sometimes. Do you agree?
It's important to be there for them.
Yes.
To physically be able to offer the help and guide them along the process, not just give them a link so that they can go figure it out themselves, which oftentimes happens. I've seen it a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's more than just the physical, because, I mean, you know, like you mentioned earlier, I mean, we live in an age of IT. You know, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah.
We're in IT. And so with that, everything is based on technology. And so we're going to talk about websites and telephone calls and that kind of thing in this society, but there's nothing wrong with us using that as a way to still stay in contact with someone, to still help them.
Oh no, I think it's the best way to stay interconnected. And it's,
mm-hmm.
and the important is having the sound relationships with the people on the other end. But if you're not capable of offering the service that the people on the other end are trustworthy and reliable to do what they have said or fulfill their obligation.
Okay. We have another caller.
I'm going to
let that caller come in and see if they have some comments. Okay. One moment. Let me see if I can get them in. I think that's actually from it's an Arizona number. Good morning. This is Dr. Applewhite. How are you?
Good morning. This is Peggy.
Morning.
Hi, dear. One moment. Having a little technical difficulty here. Go ahead, please.
For me?
I can't hear you very well, ma'am.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, a lot better.
Commercial. Earlier in the show, we were talking about mental disabilities, and one of the things that struck me is the stereotypes that people have. I was wondering if your listeners knew that someone with bipolar is a famous actress by the name of Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Mm-hmm.
She has, I saw her on, I think, Good Morning America in April. And she was talking about how she had become the reluctant poster child for bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
She even checked herself into inpatient therapy so that she could get her meds under control. But
mm-hmm.
we think of people with mental illness as people who go around shooting up malls and movie theaters. But in fact, many, many people with mental illness are... other kinds of impairment go on to function very highly in society and are very much contributing members.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very, very good point. Thank you so much for bringing that out. You're validating everything that we wish to promote through White Apple Institute, our sponsor. And we're trying to bring more awareness to these facts that there are so many. We've had a previous show where I discuss so many people that are in our basically in our celebrity status, and also historians and educators who have been diagnosed with different mental disabilities, from learning disabilities to mental health. So mental illness. So I thank you so much for bringing that awareness out, because one of the things that I'd like to know is when we talk about mental illness overall, and Greg, feel free to jump in on this one, when we talk about mental illness, how do we know, how do we identify the symptoms, and who's really responsible for identifying the symptoms? Now, I just want to use one example. Maybe I'll come up with some other ones later on down the road as we're talking, or maybe some of the other callers will. But just one that jumps out at me is Jared Loftner, okay, in Tucson here in Arizona. And it was interesting that in this particular case, the school authority, Pima Community College, actually did supposedly refused to allow him to return to campus until he passed a mental evaluation. And this is hours before he went on the days before he went on the shooting rampage in Tucson that unfortunately killed 6 people and wounded 13 others, including Reverend and the Gifford. So go ahead. Why do you think that in this case they were able to say something, even though it didn't really stop the situation, but in other cases everyone says, well, I had no idea? Go ahead, Greg.
Well, Oftentimes, just like we were taught in the military, it's the people around you that take notice, that are on the, not necessarily the lookout, but are alert enough to notice the signs and symptoms of someone in distress or suffering from going through a very difficult time in their life. I think one of the hardest stereotypes that I've been speaking about is the fact that someone who goes and does a shooting somewhere is immediately diagnosed as mentally unfit, or mentally
ill. Yes.
What's
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mentally ill. Yes.
So that gets transferred over as a stereotype to anybody who's diagnosed mentally ill to any degree, and that's a difficult challenge. It's a difficult stereotype to overcome. And it's,
just like the student I mentioned
earlier
with bipolar disorder, who asked me, would he be able to pass a background check? I mean, this young man has no potential violence at all that has been noticeable. And yet and still he is afraid of the repercussions of applying for a background check. And this can go on. I mean, if you know, I hate to use the word witch hunt, but I'm going to have to, because that's the only thing that comes up in my mind, is that if we're not careful, this can become very, very harmful in our society, of the stereotype that's beginning to develop again. And I say again because we've had this many, many years ago. We can look back and we can see even from the religious standpoint, people putting those with any kind of mental disability into asylums and institutions, or labeling them as unworthy or invaluable in this society. And we have to be very careful of not letting that happen again. Don't you agree?
I personally find that very scary.
Mm-hmm. And the possibility of it exists only in the sense that we're hearing the bombardment of this issue of mental illness associated with violence so frequently in our media that it is just overwhelming to most people, and especially those who don't have the knowledge about what mental disability is.
I think as a society, we tend to say that anyone who commits an act that is unspeakable must be mentally unbalanced. They don't take into account that possibly this person just chose to do evil.
Yes. Yes. And that is that's the premise of what we promote at White Apple Institute, is that we believe that it is not mental illness that causes these random acts of violence, but the choice to do an evil act. And possibly because of mental illness, we land up into a situation that we have to be very, very careful with this now, tread gently, that we don't make assumptions. I remember my grandmother saying to me, as I got a little older, of course, to watch those first three letters of assumption. You've heard that before? Anybody heard that before? The first three letters of assumption. Because you don't want to become, to make an ass of yourself by assuming that something is true and it's not. And so I encourage people to please educate themselves on some of the symptoms of mental illness or mental disabilities and what that really means. Because perfect example, if you remember just December last year, Adam Lanza, who was the who's the one who actually shot and killed the children, I think it was 20 of them, 26 altogether, people. And the first thing that came out on the news was that he was autistic. And then, of course, then they went into mental health issues. And the media bombarded us with that image for days until someone just removed it. And the Autistic Society came in and said, no, don't do this. Because already we were beginning to start a negative stereotype already without even having validation or fact about anything. And that's what I'm afraid of happening as we go forward with even, and I'm not saying that we should not do background checks, I'm saying that we need to be knowledgeable about what we're saying when we say someone with mental illness cannot pass a background check. We need to be very, very careful of that. We need to be careful, Greg, of our veterans who apply for background checks if they've been diagnosed with PTSD. What does that mean? Does that mean that they are going to be denied the privilege of owning a firearm? Are they going to be labeled? What is that going to mean overall? Any comment? Hello? Did I lose you? Greg, did I lose you? Okay, I might have lost the call there. Okay, but I'm hoping that as others call in, we can have more insight into what's going on with this issue of these categories that people are not aware of when we talk about the big umbrella of mental disability. Take this for instance. Think about this question. Should the staff and faculty at colleges be held more responsible for identifying the symptoms of mental illness? Now, when I ask that question, I'm not in any way using an accusing tone. What I'm saying, as a matter of fact, on the opposite, is that how can you be responsible for identifying the symptoms of mental illness, anyone, if you're not even sure what they are? And if you're not well-educated in whether or not this is just a characteristic of the person, a personality issue, or truly is it a symptom of mental illness that they're experiencing? And I want to go through some of the symptoms in just a moment. But I want to ask another question as we're still dealing with who should be held more responsible for identifying the symptoms of mental illness. I want to ask you, are parents and teachers and those that are in the medical field even, that take care of veterans and other people, Why is there such an apprehension about reporting irrational behaviors? And part of that is because of the stereotypes that are out there. And that even feeds into answering the question about who's held more responsible for identifying the symptoms. I mean, identifying the symptoms takes on the responsibility of saying, I know what that means. I know what that is. And it's a way of labeling someone and can be very, very harmful. So what I'd like to do this morning is I'd like to go through some of the warning signs that we are dealing with in our society. Greg, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. All right. I'd like to go through some of the warning signs in our society that we're dealing with and see if that helps us in any way to understand a little bit more about the issues of mental illness. And in adults, what we look for many, many times is any kind of confused thinking, that an individual that you know is all of a sudden starting to sound very, very confused or has a lot of sadness, very irritable, starts worrying about things that they never worried about before, maybe even having thoughts of suicide and expressing that. Sometimes it even manifests. Go ahead, Greg.
And a sudden change of behavior is usually a good indicator that something is going on in the person's life, or that they might be struggling with a mental illness that has been left undiagnosed.
Right. A sudden change in behavior. And, you know, sometimes it's interesting when we talk about a sudden change in behavior, because sometimes it's not even a sudden change. Sometimes it's it has been a continuous evolution of behavior. And we've seen it, but we didn't think it was very serious. We saw some social withdrawal from friends. We saw some anger, but we kind of put it aside and said, oh, okay, maybe it's just because something happened in their life. But then we see an increase of that, a progression of that type of behavior. And so, yes, it becomes a sudden change, but it could have been something that had been going on in the past for quite a while. So thanks for bringing that out so I could clarify that. Okay? You know, there's also this this issue of a lot of physical problems. And I don't think a lot of people recognize that that's another symptom of someone that may be experiencing some mental health issues, is that they start having these unexplained physical problems. They don't know why they're feeling shaky. They don't know why they're having extensive migraine headaches. We know that the abuse of drugs and alcohol, especially on a sudden basis, like you mentioned that word sudden, could be an indicator that the person is leaning in the direction of having a poor mental health status. It doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder or depression or that they're a sociopath. You know, I think that that is a typical stereotype that we run into a lot in our society, is that whenever we hear the word, the concept of mental illness, we automatically go to the Hollywood sociopath. And I say the Hollywood sociopath is the one that is well pronounced in movies and stalks and becomes a serial killer. And my goodness, we are those are such an unusual and small percentage of the population of mental health. I mean, you're talking less than 1%. That most people go ahead, Greg.
And it's the publicity that those movies gain that have helped perpetuate a stereotype that is difficult to break, for especially for people that are diagnosed and trying to get professional jobs.
Right. And that's what I'm kind of leading to, is that if we're not careful with talking about identifying those with mental illness, if we don't tread gently with this, and start putting out more information about what it is that we're really talking about here. We're talking about those who have potential, that are potentially violent. Like the psychiatrist at the University of Colorado said about, I believe it was, I can't remember his name right off the top of my head. I think it was James Holmes, the one who killed many people in Aurora, in Colorado. And she had made the statement that he was homicidal and had those tendencies. Now, that's very different than someone saying someone is depressed or feeling some inability to cope, having a change in their sleeping or eating habits. It's a long way from that. So we have to be really careful of looking at, when we say warning signs, of the fact that we're not talking about people who are diagnosed with bipolar or depression or anxiety or stress levels or generalized anxiety and stress. We're not talking about those particular individuals, and I want those people out there that are listening, all of our listeners out there, to understand that and take that message out there. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call and get some help and find some resources. If you're a veteran, call Operation Veterans Promise. Greg, give them some information about how to get in touch with you if they're veterans out there.
The best way to reach us and to get as much information, we release a weekly blog, is on OperationVeteransPromise.org, veterans plural. Our contact information is posted. We have a contact form to fill out if to reach us through that way. We're on Twitter and Facebook as well. I gladly connect with anyone through my personal account if they would like to reach out. We're trying to reach out actively, so.
Mm-hmm. Now, I thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And I appreciate you participating in the show, and I look forward to you doing this in the future, the coming online and sharing even more resources with us, and just to be available so that the veterans that do tune into the show will know that you're there, as well as they know that White Apple Institute is there to help them and support them through their to reach their goal in workforce success. Because there's so much pressure out there of transferring from military life to civilian life. And we need to be aware of that. Now, we also have, and I'd like to just share this with everyone, we have the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. And I would like to give that information out if there's anyone that needs more information about how to deal with the suicidal thoughts and anyone expressing that would be 800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K, or 800-273-8255. That would be one number to call and get information about how to identify things, resources within your community. So I guess really what I'm trying to say through all of this is that if we tread gently, if we recognize that there's more to mental disability than just saying someone is potentially violent or that they're a sociopath, which means that they have no feeling for anyone else, if we don't jump so quickly to those conclusions and we help others to understand that we can stop the potential of, God, here's that word again, Greg, of the witch hunt or the witch identification or... And I don't know if people are familiar with what I'm talking about. Are you familiar with what I'm saying, Greg?
I'm sorry, I'm not.
Okay. There was a time in history where people who had irrational behaviors, okay, any type of behavior that didn't fit into the norm, automatically they were labeled as mentally ill by many of the religious leaders of that time. And so they were labeled as witches, okay? And so that's why I use that word. And I know there's a better word to use, but I can tell you right now, this is 2013, and I just got an email in from one of our contacts in Ghana that showed me pictures, and they're actually on WHO, World Health Organization website, of people who have bipolar disorder, depression, it just goes on and on. They are actually tied, chained to trees.
Wow.
Because of the lack of education.
You know, and I think that's something that's highly overlooked in mental disabilities is a person's socioeconomic status and
mm-hmm.
and how easily they can provide for themselves or their family. All these
yes.
things can, lacking any of those, will definitely contribute to any mental health problems over time.
Yes, that's right.
And from what I've seen, civilians, especially who are not accustomed to working with veterans, lean more towards the stereotype naturally, which is why I believe most veterans, at least many that I've spoken to, prefer working with vet organizations that are not-for-profit or dedicated towards from the ground up in helping veterans.
That's right. And veterans, there is a specific. I'm glad you brought that out because there is a specific. Crisis line just for veterans, okay? And for those of you out there listening, please make sure you write this down if you have a veteran that you are concerned about. It's 1-800-273-8255, and it's the Veterans Crisis Line. And you can find that right in the on the Internet, Veterans Crisis Line. And so there, they definitely will help you get in touch with resources within your community as close as they can get to you wherever you're located around the United States and help you out with resources. So we hope that, because it is easier to talk to someone who understands the veteran issue. And then even further on, when someone is trying to go to school, and trying to make it in school and trying to make it at work, and the pressures already of that in our society just for anyone are heavy. And then add that to the factor of sadness and depression, the anxiety that can build, the lack of sleep that I've noticed in many of my students that come to me. A lot of erratic issues in their mood changes, okay? Another really good sign for all of us to look at is a feeling of failure or that, I'm not the same as I used to be. My performance is different than it used to be. And they feel that there's just no way out. It's a sense of hopelessness that they feel, just desperate to find a solution to their problems, but they feel that there is no solution. Those are immediate signs that we need to look at right away of saying we need to help this person out and not just brush it off.
I think veterans are particularly affected by this, because especially once they transition, the team
mm-hmm.
is no longer there. The chain of command is gone. For the most part, the team you've been working with is not doing their own thing now, and you moved on with another part of your life, and the sense of hopelessness or being lost is I can understand that very much.
Yes, it is definitely there, and it's a sad thing. And what I would like to see, and I am so glad, that that right now we're not dealing with veterans involved in any of these random violence events. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I'm glad that hasn't been an issue, because that would just make it even harder.
Oh, it would make it so much harder. It's already hard enough, okay, that we're dealing with the fact that there's that pressure is being put on faculty and staff at different colleges to acknowledge these warning signs, and the apprehension that comes from it because of the stereotypes that are out there. So we're hoping that if someone expresses any feelings to you, any of you listeners out there, if they express feelings of some of the warning signs that we've talked about here, and we've given you some great information, we hope that you will contact either Operation Veterans Promise or White Apple Institute or any of the other organizations that we've mentioned on the show today, and let them know that you're just concerned. It doesn't have to be that you're reporting an individual and that they're going to be taken away. What we're trying to avoid is getting to that point. And I don't see that happening on a large scale, but I don't even want to see it happening on a small scale where people are identified just because they have depression as, oh, my God, you better watch out for that person. You never know what they're going to do. It just cringes. My stomach cringes just to even think that someone would think that. You know what I mean, Greg?
And yes, it's often overlooked the value of a helpful ear or someone that will sit down and actually listen and take a moment to rather than give feedback, listen to what you have to say, and that alone is worth wonders to many people who are going through a very difficult time.
Yes. Absolutely. I have another caller. I just want to make sure that I acknowledge them. Good morning. 614. Hello. This is Dr. Applewhite. You have a comment for today's show?
Yes. Dr. Applewhite, Clarence Street.
Oh, yes, Clarence. Thank you so much for calling in this morning. Appreciate you very, very much. Clarence Street, I asked you to call in this morning as a fellow veteran. And we've had a great discussion here about identifying symptoms of mental illness, not only in adult students, but in adult students who are also veterans. And we have Greg Dombrowski, who's online also. Greg, this is Clarence Street. And Clarence is a fellow veteran and also does a lot of volunteer work for Paralyzed Veterans of America. Thank you, Clarence, for joining us this morning.
Yes. Nice to meet you, Clarence.
Nice meeting you, Greg.
All right. Now, Clarence, tell us a little bit about what we have just a few moments here, and I'd like to know what your comments are and your feelings when you're working with veterans yourself and at any level, whether you're working with PVA, Paralyzed Veterans of America, or just talking to a fellow veteran about this issue of mental illness and the stereotypes that are out there, especially when we talk about, of course, PTSD. Any comments on that?
Well, the only comment that I would have, Doctor, would be that the veteran come to the realization that there are organizations out there that are looking to help them and never feel that they are completely alone. I would say that no matter what time or hour of the day that they would, if they have the capabilities of reaching out to individuals who are willing to help them along the way, do not hesitate to do it. Do not hesitate to do it, because being in the military, you know, you're trained to operate as a unit, but then when you're by yourself, you feel that, you know, that system may have broken down. Well, I would just venture to say that the system has not broken down if we would just initiate the call.
Yes. I totally agree with that, and I know you just came on, but what we were talking about earlier is that initiating the call is one point, and then those of us who connect people to resources also need to make sure that that person was connected appropriately, and don't just drop it just at giving a number to someone or a website.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And also that you take the message out too, and I know you will, that.
Yes.
Even when we're dealing with physical disabilities, there always is a component of depression that we'll find, of anxiety that we'll find. And so
yes.
We need to be aware that just because we're dealing with a physical issue, that we may want to take a little step further to identify some of the symptoms that are related to the symptoms of mental illness. Okay, such as what we've
True.
Talked about on the anger and the sudden change of behavior, as Greg was bringing out.
That is true. I would say that there are more organizations out now that are willing to do that than there were in 1980 when I got out of the service.
Oh, yes, yes. You were in the Vietnam War
yes,
era?
Yes, we... I was stationed on Guam, where we sent off B-52 missions to Hanoi and Haiphong. And I know there were a lot of individuals that were stationed there that it was 24 hours around the clock that operation took place. And, you know, to be thrust into that type of environment as a young man and saying, how in the world did I get here?
Yes.
Well, once you're there, you know, you have to wrap your mind not only around your job at that time, but you had to wrap your mind around other individuals that were on the team. And you didn't want the team to get broke down. But I know that when I came back from service, you know, it was, you know, you still had individuals who just didn't recognize sometimes that service that you had did for your country. But you need to come to the understanding that service members stick together, no matter what branch, because we all know that we were a part of a team. Even though you may have been Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, you were still, and Coast Guard, you were still part of the team.
Yes.
So you still have to reach out to those team members, no matter where they're at, in order to seek help, because someone knows someone who can help you.
Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful statement to make as we come to the close of the show today. Yes, Greg.
It's the value of the shared experience that allows us to think more effectively than otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
And I like the fact that we're talking about a team, because already right here, and I hope that anyone who listens to the show, and especially the archive show, and I hope that you all of you who are listening will send this show out to anyone that you feel that this would be applicable to help them to expand their awareness about mental health, to avoid the stereotypes that are out there, to minimize the issues of background checks so that people, like the student I mentioned earlier, who said, am I going to pass a background check with a bipolar disorder, a diagnosis of bipolar disorder? I do not want to see that happen. I don't want to see students, veterans, feeling like they cannot discuss things with a team because they're so afraid of the stereotype that could be placed upon them.
True.
So with that, I for a close, and any closing statements that you'd like to make?
Well, the only statement that I would like to make is, whatever locale that you may be at, start trying to identify military organizations that are around you. And by identifying those organizations, they can attach you to other individuals that know of your problems, know of your concerns, because you're not by yourself. You're not by yourself.
Yes, that's very true. And especially with us, what we hope to do is build a large enough trusted network with us being able to operate as a funding engine to help actually maintain a team that'll be able to work together nationwide to expand on the systems already in place.
Thank you so much, Greg Dombrowski, for Operations Veterans Promise. Thank you, Clarence Threet, for your work and with Paralyzed Veterans of America and your volunteer work with other organizations and your commitment to helping veterans and adult students. And we close now with thanking you and hoping that all of our listeners out there will join our vet-to-vet discussions. We close now with Wes Ricks from Two Worlds and hope that you will continue to take an optimistic viewpoint about not only mental health, but your physical health. Because a healthy body is a healthy mind.
Thank you.